Good evening. It's August 7th, 2012. This is the meeting of the PNB Elections Committee. I'm the chair, Bob Lederer, and Michael Novick will now call the roll.
Ken Aaron. Fred Blair.
Present.
Lydia Brazon.
Here.
Michael Novick, that's me. I'm here. Ivan Alcime. Revelin Gold. Thomas Porter. Jane Gatewood.
Present.
Here. Nia Bediaco.
Present.
Carolyn Burden. She was present. Oh, she said she was going between two meetings. She was online a minute ago. Bob Lederer.
Here.
Manijay Saba. Anthony Fest.
Here.
Sasha Futran. Tracy Rosenberg. Andrea Turner. Teresa Allen. Wesley Bethune.
Here.
Nancy Sabar-Naratomi.
Present.
So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I don't think we have our 10.
I think we're missing Carolyn. If she's listening, she should unmute herself.
Did you get Fred?
Yeah, I have Fred, Lydia, myself, Jane. Was Revelin here? I'm sorry. No. Jane, Nia, Carolyn, maybe, Bob, Anthony, Wesley, and Nancy.
That's 10, and it's just Carolyn that called on earlier and said she was going to be muting herself, so... Including Carolyn, we've got 10.
Well, while we're waiting, let me just ask.
Okay.
Yeah, let me just ask if someone would keep time.
Oh, Bob.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to take Andrea Turner's call. She asked for an excused
absence. Okay. Hi, Terry. Okay.
She asked for an excused absence.
Okay.
Mayor.
All right. So, would anyone keep time on this call tonight?
I'll keep time.
Thanks, Nia. Okay. Well, Carolyn, have you returned? All right. My suggestion would be that we go ahead with the meeting, and if there's any substantive votes, we can revisit them when she or another, a tenth person comes on the call. But that I don't think we should just wait around for one person short of a quorum. Is there any objection to proceeding in that way? Okay. So that's what we're going to do. So if people saw my draft agenda, if you could look at that, if you're at a computer, I will read it out loud. First would be, of course, call to order and roll call, and then agenda approval, then review of and approval of minutes, and that would be 10 minutes. Approval of the next committee meeting date, that's 5 minutes. Report from the National Election Supervisor on the status of election preparation plus a question and answer. That would be 20 minutes. The NES's requested issues for the committee to provide input on, and there's three of them. A, the business reply, whether to use a business reply envelope with the ballot. That would be 10 minutes. Whether to include an inner envelope for secrecy or not, also 10 minutes. And then the third is where to hold the ballot tabulation process, as the either the corporate offices of our contractor, our tabulation contractor, or New York City. And that would be 15 minutes with an adjournment at 10 p.m. Eastern. Are there any amendments to that agenda?
I move to accept the agenda. This is Mia.
Okay. All right. Is there any objection to approval? Okay. Hearing none, then that's approved. So the first item is the review and approval of minutes. Now, Jane sent us, or I should say she resent just before this meeting, the two last sets of minutes, which are June 29th and July 17th. Do people, is there any objection to moving to discuss each of those in turn, or are there people who feel like they need more time to review them and would like to postpone?
I move to approve, and if people have any corrections, we can do them later.
Okay. All right, so let's do them one at a time then. So June 29th, any comments, corrections?
No.
Okay. All right, well then, hearing none, is there any objection to approving June 29th? Okay, hearing none, then June 29th is approved. July 17th, any comments, corrections?
Move to approve.
I just commend Jane on keeping really accurate minutes of a very complicated set of votes and stuff.
Okay. Who just joined the call?
Revelyn.
Oh, hi, Revelyn.
Hi.
Okay, well, you just made up quorum for us. Thank you.
Okay.
So we've just approved the agenda, and to be correct about the procedure, we need to go back through that decision to now that we have quorum to make sure that's okay with you. Did you have any?
I read the agenda, and I vote for it.
Oh, great. Okay, perfect. Okay, so that's done. And we were just voting on the two sets of minutes that Jane sent to us. Actually, she sent a few weeks ago, and then she resent them tonight. Do you have any objection to approving either of those, June 29th or July 17th?
Well, it's about then that I realized I left my cell phone home and I had to come from Manhattan back to Brooklyn to get on the call, so I didn't get a chance to read them.
Well, you know, what we talked about was that if after approval people find that there is something that needs to be corrected, that they can bring it up at a subsequent meeting.
Okay, so based on that proviso, is there any objection to, Revelyn, we already voted on June 29th, so do you object to approving those tonight?
On June 29th, yeah, I know I was not at that meeting. I was performing, so I know I was there, so I have no say in it one way or another.
Right. Okay, and then does anyone object to approving July 17th? Okay, well, hearing none, then that's also approved. So those two sets are done, and again, if anyone finds errors, they can bring them up at the next meeting. Okay, so now we're moving on to the report from the National Election Supervisor on status of election preparation. So, Terry, take it away. Thank you for joining us.
Bob, just a point of order. I see yes. Your approval of next committee meeting should be next.
Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped right over that. Yes, thank you. Okay, so hold off one second, Terry. So I checked the KPFTX calendar for September, and unless anyone sees some urgent reason to meet sooner than, about a month from now, I think we should, and Tuesdays have been working for our members quite well, so I was thinking we should go with Tuesday, September 18th. Is there any discussion on that proposal? So that's my motion.
Bob?
Yes.
Fred Blair.
Yes.
I have a National Technology Committee meeting at the same time, September 18th.
Really? September 18th? Because it's not on the calendar. Are you sure?
Enough. It's a task force. It's not actually a committee.
Uh-huh. Okay, so is that... all right, so then you wouldn't be able to... is that at 8:30 also, 8:30 Eastern?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, then it's really...
I would have that too the next one.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Was that Michael?
Yeah, I'm on the technology committee or whatever it is. No. I had missed the last month's meeting because they conflicted.
Uh-huh. Well, what do folks want to do? I'll tell you what's open on the calendar. The 4th and the 18th are the only Tuesdays. I mean, we could look at other days of the week. There's the 5th and the 19th, which are Wednesdays.
I would move for the 4th if that's not a conflict with anything, and if two of our members have a conflict with the 18th, I would move for the 4th.
Okay. Any discussion about the 4th?
Just question, is that part of the Labor Day holiday?
It's the day after Labor Day, which might be difficult for people just coming back if they're leaving town.
That's my first Carolyn here.
Hold on one second. If someone is speaking in the background, If someone is speaking in the background, can they please, or there's background noise, can you please mute your phone? Thank you very much, Otis. Okay, so the 4th is out.
This is Lydia.
Yes.
Is there any reason we can't do it perhaps in early October? What's available in October?
Okay.
Like early since we were...
October 2nd is a Tuesday. That's open.
Carolyn on the stack, please.
Yes, Carolyn. Go ahead.
Yeah, Tuesdays are bad for me. I teach out of town, and I'll be coming back quite late. So I would rather not, but I missed the earlier discussion. I'm sorry. What is the purpose of the meeting, our next meeting, or general
Well,
schedule?
it's just our monthly meeting. That's all. No, it's not
a
special
meeting. Okay. All right. Uh huh. Good. Yeah, I may have problems with that, but if anybody else does, I'd appreciate speaking up.
Looks like Monday the 24th is open.
Okay. Discussion on the 24th. Of September.
September 24th, Monday, September 24th. There's nothing on the KCFCX calendar.
Is there anyone who
that
has a problem
good.
With the 20th? Anyone have a problem with the 24th?
I will not be in the good old U.S. of A.
Well, that's one member not here. I mean, it looks like we're going to have to decide between several dates where one person can't be there. So let's... Why don't we put all those options on the table? So,
this is Revlin. What was wrong with the 5th? I know the 4th didn't work. Is the 5th out?
Oh, September or October?
September, the day after whatever the 4th was going to be. The 5th
right.
was also open, I heard.
Okay,
so,
yeah, no, you're right. We didn't discuss that. I mean, my feeling about that is that I'm not actually sure we're going to have that much new business from, you know,
right?
between now and then. I mean, perhaps we will. But it's just, you know, barely 4 or 5 days after the nomination deadline. I mean, unless, I don't, Terry, do you want to weigh in on, do you have any sense of whether there might be issues you might want to be bringing to us in early as opposed to late September?
Well, no. The fact is that there's an inherent lag time in anything that the committee would do because nothing you do, you can give me input, but informal input from individuals is as valuable as voted input in that neither is binding. And if you go to the PNB and get a binding and directive, it's such a long delay that I can send email to the full group and ask anybody to comment on things, whether you have a meeting or not.
Right. And you've been very diligent about that, and I just want to acknowledge that you've been the best of any election supervisor on that score. So thank you.
Yay! Well, I would like to go back. I would like to go back to Lydia's suggestion to go for the first whatever day in October.
Okay. All right. So that was Tuesday, October 2nd. All right. So why don't we see if that you know, wins the majority, and if not, then we can consider another option. So is there any objection to Tuesday, October 2nd?
Yeah, Carolyn here. I do have a problem with Tuesday.
Okay, so then let's take a formal vote. Michael, can you please call the roll?
I'm sorry, before we do that, there
yes.
was another date that was mentioned. It was, Michael mentioned it. He said that it was, I think, September 25th or 24th.
Oh, 24th, right. Okay.
Was that a Monday?
Somebody's going to be out of the country.
It was a
right.
Oh, it was a Monday. Oh, okay, right. And you're going to be out of the country.
Right. But actually, since in both cases one member can't be there, why don't we do what Robert's Rules provides, which is a fill-in-the-blank vote. So when your name is called, you can say either September 24th or October 5th. All right? I'm sorry, not October 5th. Sorry, I'm looking at the wrong thing. Either Tuesday, October 2nd, or Monday, September 24th. Is everyone clear on the vote? Okay,
yes.
So go ahead, call the roll, Michael.
Okay, Fred Blair.
September 24th.
Question?
I couldn't hear the question.
Go ahead.
Yeah, a couple of things. This is Sasha, and I'm an assistant, first of all. But what if both dates work for somebody or neither one does? How do they vote?
You should vote for your preference because we're trying to see which of these has a majority. Unless someone
okay. All right.
wants to correct me on procedure, I believe that's how this kind of vote works.
I think that, I don't know.
Or I'm remembering now a past vote. I think actually you can vote for more than one because that shows how many people could do a meeting. So, yeah, so vote either for one date or two. You can. It's up to you. Okay, and Michael will tally both. Is that clear
okay.
to everyone?
Yeah.
Thanks, Sasha, for that question. Okay, can you start over again, Michael, please?
Yeah, sure. Fred Blair?
I vote for September 4th.
The choices are September 24th and October 2nd. Fred?
I'm sorry, Fred, September 24th or?
Or October 2nd. So, Fred, how do you vote?
That's kind of...
Who's in the background talking? Let's vote. Well, what's going on? The time is up.
All right, let's keep going, and we can get Fred
right.
at the end.
Lydia Brazone.
Lydia says October 2nd.
Go ahead, Michael.
Either.
Okay. Michael, keep calling.
Redwood and Gold. Yeah, sorry. Redwood and Gold.
Both.
I'm trying to record the results. Just a little bit. Go ahead. Revlin, what was that?
Both.
Both?
Both. B-O-T-H, both.
Yes, okay. I'm sorry. Jane Gatewood.
Either one is fine. You can give me for both.
Nia Bediako.
October 2nd.
Carolyn Burden.
Sorry, I was muted. The 24th, September 24th. Thank you.
Bob Lederer.
October 2nd.
Anthony Fest.
September 24th.
Thank you.
Sasha Futron.
October 2nd.
Wesley Bethune.
Either one's okay.
I can.
Nancy Zabarnari Tony.
The earlier one, 24th.
Okay, going back to Fred Blair, who originally said September 4th. That wasn't the date. Fred, September 24th or October 2nd?
September 24th.
Okay, one. 6.
Manager, I have not been called.
Oh. Okay, I didn't know you were on the phone. Pardon me. Manager Stella?
Yes.
Yeah.
Second.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Second, she said.
Second.
October 2nd.
Yes.
All right, let me try to get a count.
Michael, did you vote?
Yes, I said I could make either.
Okay.
I'm trying to count here. 1, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 9 for the October 2nd, 8 for September 24th.
Okay, so we'll be meeting October 2nd. So let's move on now to the report from the National Election Supervisor.
Okay. I'll make this short so you can ask questions. Local election supervisors are on board, 5 very good people. I think it's a reflection of what's happening in the national economy that we got over 100 applications, and we had some really excellent people. We had applicants with a lot of union organizing experience running elections for the Teamsters. We had people with PhDs. We had people with a lot of radio experience. Overall, I'm very pleased with the crop, and I think we have 5 excellent local election supervisors. They're up and running. They've got, you know, workspace set up and phones and emails set up, and have gotten things on air, announcements and so on. The biggest challenge we've had up to this point is some website activity has not been as fast as I would like it to be. Some of that has, there's all kinds of extenuating circumstances in each particular case. I don't know if you want to go into the details, but I will mention that the biggest problem has definitely been the WBAI website. It's been very hard to get things up there quickly, and continues to be a difficulty. Most of the other websites are being pretty quick. The Pacifica Elections website we have set up is a place where we have Otis has set up something so we can have every prospective candidate from any station go on that site to put in their contact information and their candidate statements and so on and so forth, get their packets and so on. And that was not up and running as quickly as we had wanted, but it was a small delay, and it's working well. KPFT.
What's the web address for that?
The actual address is, you don't put in www. That will screw you up. The actual address is simply, you know, the http://elections with an S .pacifica.org. And that's going to be our national elections webpage. And if you go there, there's some FAQs about elections and stuff. There's also a place where prospective candidates can click and log in, create an account, download their packets, and we get candidate information, you know, how to contact them. One of the problems in some past elections is packets were simply available online, downloaded, and the local election supervisor had no idea how many people were thinking of running until the deadline arrived, and they either got plenty of candidates or they didn't get enough, and they had no way of knowing because they weren't able to keep track of who was downloading packets. So we decide we're going to make sure that we find out who they are as they get their packets, so we at least have an idea of how many people have requested packets, because we are not going to get more candidates than there are petitions out there circulating. KPFT uniquely is doing it on their own website. They were up and running quickly, so they are not coordinating with the other 4 sites on the elections.pacifica.org website. The other things the election supervisors are working on besides the on-air announcements and so on is member lists, trying to get access to all the member lists and start the audit procedures that I've specified they all have to follow. And at each of the stations, there are some problems. There's no station where it's completely effortless and everything's ready to go and everything's already perfect. Some stations, it's farther behind than others. At some stations, there actually is not a volunteer list of people who have come in to do the phone things. There's just people, local election supervisors have been told, contact these series of people who may have had volunteers helping. And that's really not the local election supervisor's job to create a list, but rather to audit a list. And so we're having some challenges there. But we have enough time still that, you know, I think we can get it together. The one area where there is sort of a black hole is the whole issue of waivers, which each of the local stations boards, according to the bylaws, is allowed to grant individuals on a case-by-case basis who cannot afford the $25 minimum contribution and are not able to do the three-hour minimum contribution of labor, who have demonstrated a sincere interest in being a member, the LSBs are allowed to grant waivers. And some stations have had procedures and even application forms that they've used in the past. Some stations, the local station boards, are like, huh, what's this? They don't know about it, and it hasn't been used in recent years. And so we're all over the map in terms of what the local station boards are doing. But I don't think any of them have an ongoing procedure that they've been using over the last year, but they have ones that they can resurrect or not. So I sent out a memo, which I thought had been circulated back in mid-July, but apparently it didn't get out to all the local station board chairs until I resent it today. Or maybe it was yesterday. I think it was today. So it's not a requirement that any station have a waiver procedure or grant any waivers, but if they do grant waivers as election supervisors, our job is to make sure that they are done according to the bylaws and that they are not done in an unfair way as a means of packing member lists. Packing member lists can be done in two different ways. Obviously, someone might bring in a list of, you know, 500 names saying these are all people who want to be members and can't afford it, and I want to add them all to the member list. And those are all people who the person thinks will support a particular candidate. That's obviously one kind of packing, which is rather transparent. Another kind of packing could be similar, but just by adding additional names to the member list, it makes the quorum harder to achieve, particularly if the people who are added are definitely not going to vote. And, for example, since if the quorum is not achieved, sitting board members can continue in office, there's also the potential for corruption, if you will, by adding names, even if they're not, you know, hope that they'll vote a particular way. So as election supervisors, we obviously have to monitor the waiver process. It's the one black hole in the entire process where the potential for fraud is not really the right word, mischief is possible. So although the bylaws say waivers shall be granted, may be granted by local station board at their discretion, the bylaws also say that we as local election supervisors have to assure that the elections are conducted according to the bylaws and conducted fairly. If we see signs that the waiver process is being used to pack the list, we will disallow those waivers. I don't see any sign of that. I'm not trying to cast aspersions. I don't think it's ever happened. I don't think it's likely to happen. I'm just giving you a full report. The only other thing, in terms of two other last things, recruitment of candidates is challenging in that election supervisors, although it's not in the bylaws job description at all for election supervisors to do recruiting, it has become accepted that they probably should try to do that because there's really the only other people who do recruiting possibly are slates that might want to make sure that they have enough candidates to fill their slate. But there's nobody designated within the foundation or within the station to do recruiting. Some nonprofit boards have nominations committees. Such things do not exist, I don't believe, at any of the local station boards. So it has often fallen to the election supervisors to sort of play that role. The trick or the problem is that if a local election supervisor recruits candidates, there might be allegations of bias, like you recruited people who are of a particular persuasion, or you're going to favor the people that you recruited. So we're having to walk a fine line of promoting candidacy in general without talking to individuals about would you be willing to run. So it's going to be things like email blasts, press releases, on-air announcements, but not one-on-one recruiting, basically. The last thing I want to put in my report, and then questions and answers, is the question that has come up about the Election Service Corporation's contract, which you're going to be discussing some of the details about. There has not been a contract signed. I'm waiting for Arlene to give me the final say-so about what she wants in terms of the options, some of which you're discussing today, like business reply envelope. I think just about everybody's saying, yeah, let's do that. Let's make sure we get a quorum. That is, according to the Election Services Corporation, a good way of increasing voter participation. A lot is by using business reply envelopes. Also increasing voter participation by using Internet as an option in addition to the paper ballot that people receive in the mail. And so I think Arlene is leaning towards both of those things. So if the Elections Committee wants to weigh in on those, you need to talk to Arlene or send her a message very quickly, because we're going to want to do that contract, as soon as feasible. The last thing I would say about the Election Services contract, I did talk with Frank Fatone, who's the principal there, about the idea of using a newsprint for the candidate booklet. And there is a small amount of savings that is possible. The challenge is you can save maybe $600 on the printing, but the printer can only print they won't do just a single piece of paper. It's more sheets than that to do a run, because they cut it from a larger sheet. And then if you print like a 12-page thing, then you're actually increasing the postage because you're adding more paper, even though it's thin paper. So his basic recommendation was you're cutting off your nose to spite your face. You're trying to save money, but you're adding money in this other side. And net, you would probably save, he said, about $600 if you did that. And he recommended against it. I haven't made any final decision, but I'm just telling you that that's what his experienced recommendation was about the newsprint option. I guess that's it for my report. I'm open for questions and answers now.
Okay. Thank you, Terry. And let me just ask if you can post that memo about the waivers to the committee listserv.
The memo I sent around to the local station board chairs, I could post the memo to the full election committee list, yes.
Right, thank you. Okay, so who has questions or comments?
It sounds like something got on.
This is Jane. I was off and I got back on.
Okay. All right, so who would like to speak?
Lydia.
Okay, Lydia, Carolyn, anyone else?
Revelin.
Okay. All right, Lydia first.
So my question is, on which station is it that's having the, didn't have like the, and I was unclear whether it was unpaid staff, which, you know, are unpaid programmers and their unpaid staff, or was it the
every
volunteers
station
and that sort of thing? Pardon?
Every station does not have unpaid staff lists that are clean. KPFA, initially, the bylaws say that if they have an unpaid staff organization, we simply use the list of people who are members in good standing of that organization. At one point, we were told, yep, they have such an organization, and then we were told, nope, we're not functioning, we're trying to reorganize, and we're not really functioning, and then we were told, that person doesn't know what they're talking about, of course we're functioning, and we have a list. So at KPFA, we have a unique circumstance because they may or may not, apparently they do have a functioning, recognized unpaid staff organization. At the other four stations, there are no good, ready-to-go, clean lists, but I think at all four stations, there are staff working on generating those lists, but we don't have them yet. Or we don't have ones that are anywhere near adequate yet.
Thank you.
Can I? Is this a point of clarification? This is Revelyn.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm not sure. I thought you were talking about a clean list of members to send the ballots out to. But what list are you talking about? I'm not
okay.
clear.
With two separate elections, the staff election and the listener election. So it's 10 elections
uh-huh.
that we're dealing with. So the listener lists, paid listener lists, are in basically pretty good shape. There's cleanup that needs to happen. We need to dedupe them, remove divide some of the multi-member households that have given more than $50. So there's some cleanup that needs to happen. But they're also, most of the stations, because they've been doing fund drives, are behind data entry. So no station has a clean, ready-to-go member list for unpaid staff, nor a clean, ready-to-go list for listener members. We do have lists of paid, but that's a pretty easy one. They just look at their payroll and remove the management members. So all the stations, they're all within reach. The ones that are the most challenging right now, quite frankly, are members who have done the 3-hour volunteer work, who are not, because in most stations they are not even data entered into the member list if they haven't given money. So they're on sheets of paper. They're not in MEMSIS, as I understand it. So at some stations, there's not a single individual who's even in charge of that. It's like you have to go and ask all these people, who do they know who's done volunteer work? And at every station, the local election supervisors are trying to get that together.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Carolyn?
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Terry. I have two questions. One is about the unpaid staff list. And that is, have you been in touch with Otis? Is his staff registry anywhere near ready to go or useful for this election? I know that's a, excuse me?
That wasn't me.
I'm just wondering, yeah, I hear background noise. But then the question is the unpaid staff list at Otis the registry? And have the GMs been collecting names for you, or are some of them falling behind? And maybe is there something you can do about that, or Arlene, or even this committee could recommend about that? And then the other question had to do with a longstanding problem. It may not be very large anymore, but at one point, even up until last year, I was hearing people on the air, producers on the air, selling gift memberships, which we are not allowed to do specifically. And I know Les Radke tried to address that problem by suggesting that people who were entered as recipients of gift memberships should be sent a letter asking them if they would like to become a real member, and if so, would they please send in $25 and some indication that they actually want to be members rather than gifts, because gift memberships are not allowed, and they're not supposed to get ballots, and of course they were getting ballots. Have you found... So that's still a problem, or is that
okay? Two questions. Okay, unpaid staff. I don't know of any list maintained by Otis. I don't. That's the first I've heard of such a thing. And if there is such a thing, I'm sure it's not up to date, because even the local station board data on the lists that Otis maintains, he relies on the local station boards to update things. For example, I went to the list and found. Local station board chair listed for one of the stations hasn't been chair for over a year, but it might be that the new chair didn't know that she or he was supposed to go to this site and update who the chair was now. So I don't know about you. Maybe you can tell me offline, send me an email if there's something that Otis has that I should know about, but I don't know of any unpaid staff list that he has. I know the stations have been working on creating those lists. Some stations are pretty far along and have rough lists. And I think all stations have at least cursory lists. It's just that they need work. But they're not. It's not unmanageable. It's conceivable we could have lists. And the list that I have looked at, I've only looked at two stations' unpaid staff lists, their initial lists. They all were within the realm of reasonable. There was no program that had, you know, like 30 unpaid staff. It's like they were all, you know, within the realm of quite reasonable numbers per program. of the lists I did look at. And then the other question about gift memberships. Yeah, it's there have been rulings from election supervisors in the past, and I concur that.
I'm sorry, Terry, can I interrupt you? Somebody is carrying on a conversation in the background. Can you please mute?
Okay, the issue of gift memberships, there is no such thing as a gift membership. There might be something. Well, let me make this clear. Some of the stations have a membership level of, let's say, $35, and that is a station membership that might give you some privileges. I don't know if you get an email newsletter or whatever some station may have. But as far as the foundation is concerned and voting rights, there is only the $25 threshold at this point. So a station might say on their on-air things, please give us $35 and become a member of this station. They can say that and try and get $35 from people, but if someone gives $25, they may not be considered a member of the station as far as the station is concerned, but as far as voting in the elections, they are members. And gift memberships are specifically not allowed because as local national election supervisors of the past and I have ruled, the bylaws say it must be a donation from the individual. So you may not give a donation for another person and make that person a member.
Oh, my point of clarification on that, if I may. The question of two-tier memberships, like 35, 25, that also, I understood, was forbidden by California code, which forbids two classes of members. They say
no, there's only one class. There's in terms of the foundation.
No, but some with extra benefits. Some can't. You can't have two classes of membership with some getting extra benefits for extra money.
You cannot have, in terms of the foundation, talking about the foundation, there's only one kind of membership, which is a basic listener membership achieved with $25 or 3 hours of volunteer work. That's all that exists. A station can say you can become a roundtable premier member for $150 a month. They can make up anything they want as a promotional thing. As far as the foundation's concerned, those are decorations. They're not real as far as the foundation.
That's very new to me. Has that been in effect for a long time? That's brand new to me. Am I the only one who didn't know that? Yeah.
Having amounts above 25?
Right.
I know at least one or two stations they have been asking people to give 35.
This is WPSN.
I always thought it was illegal.
Well, Chair, it's time. Can you extend or...
Okay. I actually have a couple questions myself. So is there someone like to – how many people have questions? Let me ask that.
Revelin was next on the stack.
Okay. Revelin, myself, who – anyone else?
Michael Novick.
This is Anthony. I have a question, but I'd like to interject something real quick.
Okay, hold on. I'm just making a list right now, so I got
– Do you know that Michael Novick wants to be on the stack?
Yes,
and,
I did.
And Sasha as well.
Nancy, okay, so, did you get Nancy?
No. Revelin, Michael, Sasha, Nancy, did I miss someone?
Yourself.
Right. Thank you.
I will shorten my answers.
No. You're doing fine. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So... is there any objection to 10-minute extension?
I think 15 minutes would be reasonable.
Okay. Is there any objection to a 15-minute extension? Okay. Hearing none, then that's approved, and we'll go on with the stack. So I have Revelin next.
Terry, I just had two quick things. Because I've been voted for two consecutive terms, in neither case did our election achieve quorum. And if I wanted to stay on the board, I would be running again and not, you know, and possibly not achieving quorum. And it's very disturbing because it takes a lot of energy to run. And so I want to know if in the back of your mind you could be thinking about that, which leads me to my second point, which is we have an LSB meeting tomorrow, and I'm going to
write a letter that talks about asking each member to try to find at least three people to run and try to find your group that you're going to talk to that will vote. Because, you know, again, this is great, but when we don't reach quorum, it puts us in a very precarious situation, you know, such as we've had at WPFW with people who've been very, very, made great contributions to both the local and national board, such as Marcel and Campbell. We all came in at the same time and didn't reach quorum. So that's a big issue for me. I just would like to see more excitement stirred up. We have a great announcement running, but I just think there's more that we could do. It just seems like if you're not in this narrow groove and you don't hear about it, you know, it'll just pass you by. And I wish there was some way that we could expand the energy for the election.
All I'll say is WPFW is a unique circumstance. And John Bush, who is the local election supervisor down there, has a unique charge compared to all the other local election supervisors in that recruiting is a much higher priority of his than for any of others. Most of the other stations, I think, will have enough candidates. John is making a special recruitment effort.
I'm talking about candidates and people who vote also, though. I just want to say that.
Right. I don't really have anything to add.
Okay. Michael?
I think the thing about gift memberships and also different levels, what they do is that if someone is getting a gift, usually it's because they want to have the premium sent to that person. And so the donor is considered the person who's making the pledge in every case, not the person who's receiving the gift. I think if you're a Jeopardy guy, he'll tell you that. And then I think that's related to the question of other levels. I think basically people are being asked to send additional money for the thank you of a premium beyond their initial membership. And, you know, so the donors, any donor in the Memphis is 25 or up, but that's the only membership is 25. It doesn't matter how much more than 25 you give, you're still just a member.
I have no response.
Okay. All right. So Sasha's next.
Yeah, hi. So I just wanted to say something about the KCSA UPSO organization. I'm a listener. I'm not a member of staff paid or unpaid. But my understanding is that the unpaid staff organization was not really functioning this year. As I've heard, a number of unpaid staff tell us. There have been a few meetings with those that attended. There were like 6 to 8 people. And sometimes that was stacked with members of one or another show. I do understand, and Anthony probably has more information on this, that UPSO was council, the 5-member board, was having an election, either about to or did it recently. But as I go on the website, I see only 4 names, and there should be 5. For the UPSO Council, which are the people you would turn to for the putting together the list. The other is that the unpaid staff organization's list of people qualified to vote in the election has, in my 6 years on the board, been extremely controversial at KPFA. And there are many charges of people, particularly from shows produced by collective stacking the deck, people who have not been around for years. And the last election, there was an UPSO council member, for instance, who I think handled 10 or 12 votes that supposedly he picked up for other people to the station. We do a hand collection in the last 2 weeks. I just want to point that out. You know, you said something about the unpaid staff organization, and you mentioned KPFA in particular, hearing 2 versions of this. I just wanted to throw some information.
Yeah, I would just suggest that you talk directly with Aaron Morris, who's the local election supervisor at KPFA. I, as a national person, I am not, you know, familiar with the details at each station, other than when a local election supervisor tells me, I'm having a trouble with this. Can you talk to Arlene about the general manager or something like that?
So I'm sort of like the troubleshooter to some extent, but I'm not monitoring the day-to-day activities of each of the supervisors. But if you have particular anecdotes of recent history that you think are important for the local election supervisor to know, you're perfectly welcome to talk to him directly. And yeah, his phone number and email, more Aaron's phone number and email are on the website.
Are on the Pacifica.
They're on the KPFA website.
They're on the KPFA website. Great, thank you.
Okay, next is Nancy.
Yes, Terry, I just want to make it clear that you understand that if a local that the local election supervisor has the power to put any programmer who is uncooperative during the election process on probation. And that's in the bylaws, and you do know that, right?
Well, that's not technically the case. It's if they have violated the fair campaign provision, not simply being uncooperative.
What I meant about the election.
Right. So if they have, for example, started talking about a particular candidate in a listener election that they think would be great, that is a violation, and I can take them off the air. The local election supervisors can take them off the air until the election's over. We can also remove that candidate from the ballot. So we do have those kinds of powers around candidates. But at some stations, some of the on-air people, if they have a union contract, there are some difficulties where the bylaws say that we have certain authorities, but there might be a legally binding employee contract through the union or something like that, which is different. So it's not 100% crystal clear in every case. But I believe Arlene is assuring me over and over and over again that the all five managers are really on board with the election process. In some years in the past, there's been sort of reticence about even having the election. And this year, although four of the five general managers have never gone through an election as a general manager, it's new to them, they are all being supportive and cooperative.
Okay, and if there's is there a signature of all the programmers saying that they are going to cooperate during the elections?
That's a management issue for the station and the general manager. What we are requiring all the staff to do is sign a statement saying that they have read and understand the fair campaign provisions, which deal with avoiding using station resources to favor one listener candidate over another. Anything beyond that is station management, how they choose to enforce the policies of the station with their staff.
Okay, this is – I'm not – at the last election, we had one programmer call a candidate a pig, and management was aware of it and did nothing.
Well, the local election supervisor should have taken them off the air, if nothing else. First, they get a warning. They don't go off the air immediately. They get a warning first, and if it's egregious, we can take them off the air or cut their hours, or we can run that candidate who was attacked, run that candidate's on-air PSA, their CART, additional times to make up for, negative things, et cetera.
Okay, well, last time the elections local election supervisor, despite complaints, said she has absolutely no power over the programmers. So in case that kind of thing happens, you have enough authority to fire that person and put another local election supervisor in charge?
Well, yes. The local election supervisors serve, at the discretion of the national. As far as I understand, I mean, they do have contracts, but so I believe Arlene would have to be the person to actually fire them.
Oh, so you have no control over them then?
Oh, I appoint them. Arlene cannot pick anybody, but Arlene has to approve the people I appoint. But once they are appointed, they are employees of the foundation. I'm an independent contractor. I don't have any employees. I supervise them, but in terms of actually firing somebody, I'm not legally their boss. I'm their supervisor in terms of the election process.
Okay, so okay. We should move
on. I have one more question. The color of the envelopes, is there a color on them or are they white?
I think the likely scenario, we have not gotten to that level of detail. I think the proposal is probably going to be that we use the cheapest envelopes we can, just white envelopes, no inside separate envelope, but each envelope will be printed uniquely with the appropriate barcode or designation to know whether it's a staff or listener envelope. There's essentially zero chance. There's no possible way that the ballot could be mixed up. I mean, because, you know, a staff ballot has different, you know, barcodes and different names than a listener ballot. So since we're not relying on listeners to sort the ballots, it's being done by professionals who do it day in and day out for hundreds of different elections for different unions and organizations. Colored envelopes is not really a concern.
Well, I think it's a very good idea because, you know, when those things come in the mail and people have a whole bunch of mail and it's all white.
Oh, you mean the outgoing envelopes?
Yes.
Okay. Hold on, Nancy. We're going to discuss the envelope question
okay.
a little later in the meeting.
Okay.
So we need to move on right now. I had a couple questions myself. The process you were describing of straightening out all the different types of lists, have you set forth a timetable for when all that should be, you know, when the stages of that should happen?
Yeah, yes, all the local election supervisors were given a manual that I crafted that has the deadline for them to submit an audited first round. There's a first level audit, which we're going to do during the August. But it's not the ultimate audit because we're still going to be adding more names and deduping up until because people might join on August 31st, and so if they're on by September 1st, so we have to redo the audit, some sort of audit after September 1st. But the first round one we're hoping to have done during August. So we should have lists to have a good idea of how many members we have, what the quorums will be, and have a good idea of the quality of the lists during this month. Then we have more time in September to do a second level of cleaning because we don't actually have to have the cleaned lists to the vendor until October.
Okay. And a related question is that in past elections, I can really just speak about our station, WBAI. There has been, for the unpaid staff, a process of the lists that are generated are publicly posted both physically but also by email to the existing list of staff. And then anyone who has corrections or additions can post them by a certain process. And so the point is it's a transparent process. And I just wanted to ask if you've already prescribed that each station should practice transparency in the way they assemble their staff list.
Well, I didn't use that word, but yes, there is a requirement that once the first round of cleaning of the list and we have an unpaid staff list, that has to be posted at the station for people to comment on and give corrections that they think should be made. I did not think of the idea of email. I didn't know if we had as an email list, but I guess that would be a good idea as well to email the list around to all the other unpaid staff, because not all the unpaid staff ever even show up at the station, I assume.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And that's the way that much communication is done about many things, including the election. Already we've gotten an email about that from our local election supervisor. Uh-huh. We were on the unpaid staff. So, okay. All right.
One more question?
Okay, very fast.
Okay, very quick. Are we going to have the scheduling of all the speeches? Is it going to be like, you know, when they were done on the website?
I don't understand the question.
Yeah, the schedule. Are we going to be able to see a list of the schedules of all the campaign speeches in our hand to be able to check to make sure that they are played correctly?
Oh. You're saying the carts of each of the candidates, once
yes.
reported, they're going to be on air. That's something I have not even thought about. I'm busy with the issue of finding candidates rather than the campaign. That sounds like a good idea. I can't guarantee that the program director and the traffic person at the station will be able to generate that. That sounds like a desirable strategy. I think I can propose that, but I can't guarantee that that's going to happen, but I think that's a good idea.
Well, couldn't we vote it in as the election committee?
No, because the fact is what it comes down to is the executive director appoints the general manager, and she tells them what their job is. The general manager tells the program director and the traffic person who keeps the logs of what happens on the air what their jobs are. And at that level, you as local station board or Pacifica National Board and I as a national election supervisor, we are not management of the station. And we cannot get to the level of telling an individual staff person, here, put this card on this time. Their superior in the chain of command at the station has to do that. So we can tell them, we can tell the management, this is what we think needs to happen for us to certify the election. But we cannot, we meaning both you guys as a committee, the local station board, and I as an election supervisor, we cannot tell a particular staff person, do this. That's beyond, you know, we can't do that.
Well, okay, that's what I wasn't meant to. I meant
okay,
to be
Nancy,
able to check.
Nancy, we have to move on.
Okay.
Time, Bob. Time is up.
Okay, thanks.